Hello everybody, and welcome to the second installment of the community Q&A videos that I've been doing on the channel. Just want to say thank you to everyone for submitting all of their really great questions. I'm really looking forward to jumping into this with all of you. I want to say sorry for the delay to this video coming out, reason being that there was an impromptu visit to go see my mum in North Wales. I hadn't seen my mum at that point in just over 6 months. Because of coronavirus, obviously, there was travel restrictions, so I wasn't able to go and see her. So those restrictions have been lifted, so I had an opportunity to go see my mum and took the train down to North Wales, and it was a lovely trip. And I'm just showing some photos now. This is an area just about 15 minutes away from where my mum lives in the Snowdonian region of North Wales called Betws y Coed. And this is an absolutely breathtaking area of the world. If any of you get an opportunity to go to North Wales, I would highly suggest that you hit up the Snowdonian region and try and go camping somewhere, because you've just got basically boundless nature, mountains, rivers, forests, waterfalls, wildlife, literally for as far as the eye can see. And you've got the clearest skies. When the sky is clear, you can see the stars just in such a phenomenal way. So it's a really good place to go if you want to do CE5s, if you've got a group and you can jump in the car, go camping somewhere, and just check out not only the nature that's around you, which is breathtaking, but also the night skies. So yeah, I am back now and we are ready to jump into the Q&A. So what I've got to do is I've got them all on my phone here and I'm going to read them out and we're just going to roll through them like that. So the first question I've got is by Emperor Lars 18, and they say, if the entities are using consciousness to contact us, why appear as an alien, brackets, short, big head and black eyes, why not appear as a modern human? So it's a good question. I mean, I don't have an actual definitive answer, obviously. I'm not read into anything that would allow me to know any type of information to that level, but I guess what we can talk about is what's already been discussed in the field. So in regards to human looking ETs, there are stories of the things such as the Nordic blondes and other such ETs that do actually look extremely similar to human beings, and so they may be interacting with us as well. There's also the idea that there's some greys from planets such as Zeta Reticuli, and I think the Andromeda system is one of the systems that's spoken of. So maybe some of these greys, some of these, you know, big black eye, big headed, grey looking aliens are just their own species, and they're also interacting with us through consciousness and doing this. There's also people that claim, like Dr. Stephen Greer and someone that I'm currently speaking with who says they are in the US intelligence services, who lean towards the idea that many of these grey looking aliens are actually what are called programmed life forms, which are some form of highly advanced, very complex and far more intelligent than basically the smartest human we have on this planet, androids. Maybe part biological, but essentially they're remote controlled, and they're used as kind of surveillance and reconnaissance drones, and we've been basically shooting those down if we have indeed been disengaging ET craft and subsequently retrieving the materials. So there are people that believe that the greys are essentially utilized by different species, and I have also been told by the same person that says they're in the US intelligence services that the greys are utilized by species that look a lot more like humans, and they look very human. So if that is the case, then it's a good question that you bring up. Why would they use something that looks completely different to them if they are indeed human looking? I guess one reason could be that they don't want humans to realize that they look human. That is just speculation on my part, because I have no actual information on that. It's all speculation. I think until we're given more information that's potentially classified on that topic, we're all just sifting through the minutiae and trying to find facts, which are very hard to find. So yeah, from my personal perspective, I would say that there's a few different reasons. One, the greys in some level could be their own species. They could be interacting with us on a conscious level, completely separate to any other beings that are here as well. They could also be programmed life forms. They could also even be, what Dr. Greer has hinted at, which is the idea of the MyLabs, military abductions that utilize costumed up military personnel to essentially operate a psychological warfare pattern on the populace to create the idea of a threat. I don't know how much I subscribe to that. I'm just putting it out there as a theory, because that is one that has been proposed, that many of the encounters with negative grey aliens, and many of the abductions could potentially be a psychological warfare front from a certain section of the government or the corporate strange Majestic 12 world that is doing this for the purposes of kind of guiding the global population in a certain ideological pathway when it comes to ETs. But again, it's just speculation. Thank you for the question. Next question we have is by Andrew Mills. Andrew Mills asks, how did you gain access to Mr. X? Good question. The story of me getting access to Mr. X is actually the story of me getting access to Grant Cameron and Richard Dolan, James Rigney, Michael Hall, the kind of the core group surrounding the Admiral Wilson leaks, essentially. So all of that came about by me putting out a little promo for the Admiral Wilson production that I'm planning on doing. So I put that out a while back, and you can find it on the channel. I'll put a little thumbnail up on the screen. And that video essentially was my first proposal to the public that I'm going to basically do a production on the Admiral Wilson leaks, focusing primarily on them. And at the time, it was quite a small, it was quite a small project. It was part of what I've called the reading room, which I haven't expanded on yet as much as I'd like to, but I am going to get back to it. The reading room was just kind of like a little, like a podcast idea, where I was going to read through documents and articles that I thought were very important, that I think people may not have the time to read fully, and may not have heard that information if they didn't just sit back and listen to it, because not everyone wants to go poring through documents or reading really extensive articles, and some people like to just sit back and listen. So I thought I'd provide that with the reading room. And I did the Salvatore Pi patents, and obviously there is a lot of controversy surrounding those patents. I am now of the opinion, my opinion has shifted, because I was looking at it from a very layman's perspective. I have had more informed opinions given to me by people who I, you know, trust because of their scientific understanding, who believe that the technologies described within the patents are in essence a correct step towards these, but they're full of breadcrumbs that are unnecessary. So they're full of junk science, or they're full of science that is too convoluted and it doesn't actually need to be as complicated. And I would refer back to things like the Sapphire Project in regards to streamlining that process, because the Sapphire Project is probably the best example publicly of a new energy corporation or a new energy institution that's trying to push these types of ideas, but in a far more streamlined capacity to what's being described in those patents. Anyway, getting back to the original point with the Admiral Wilson leaks, I put out this promo basically because I was going to do a reading room on the documents. I was going to read through the entire documents, and I think that was pretty much it, really. I think I was going to put some visuals in, but I decided to put out a promo. It got a bit of attention. It got the attention of James Rigney. I think James Rigney put me in contact with Richard Dolan. I kind of forget the story of how I got communicating with who, but essentially it ended up with James Rigney, Richard Dolan, Grant Cameron, Michael Hall, and a couple of others who at the moment I can't name, but I definitely will be able to talk about, I will have on the channel, and I know that I'm going to be in the book of someone who I can't speak of right now, but they're going to be known to the community on quite a wide scale pretty soon. But yeah, these people I got in contact with, and basically Richard Dolan, when I had a phone call with him, he told me that we had a mutual friend, someone that was following the channel. And he told me their name, and I was like, oh, I'm not actually familiar with who that person is. And they said, oh, okay, well, they've been, you know, Richard said he's been following the channel for quite some time, and he's, you know, he's very interested in your work, and he's, you know, he's spoken to me about your channel. And so I was quite intrigued. And I believe Richard gave me his email address, if I'm remembering this correctly. It was a little while ago now, and so much has happened that it's hard to kind of remember all of these little details. But basically, Richard, I think, gave me the contact details for Mr. X, and we started speaking. And when we had a few phone calls, I decided that I really wanted to get him on the channel. And basically, the rest is history. That's how you guys know about Mr. X, because we had this interaction via a communication bridge through Richard Dolan. And from there, it's been fantastic. So as you know, because Richard has said this before, that he's a good friend of Mr. X. He knows him. And he respects his wishes to remain anonymous, as does Bob McGuire, Science Bob, James Rigney, and a few others. So it's it's one of those things where I understand that people don't like the mysteriousness behind it, but he just wants to remain private for his own reasons, and I think we should respect that. But he is not an insider. He's not a A PhD scientist that's come out of a special access program that's talking about these types of physics. He's just someone who literally day and night, from dusk till dawn, pretty much every single day, has been researching all of the different caveats to do with this subject, with the UFO topic, with the science behind it, the propulsion, the physics. And obviously he's extremely involved in things like the EVO phenomena and organizing plasmas. And him and Bob McGuire, Science Bob, are actually planning, which you may have heard on the Grant Cameron, I believe it was Grant Cameron or Richard Dolan, pretty sure it was Grant Cameron's recent upload with Bob McGuire. Him and Mr. X are actually planning on working together on this, and Bob McGuire is going to basically try and replicate these ideas in a lab environment. And so I think that's really exciting, and that's obviously going to be a very public thing if it does go down that route, because things like the Sapphire Project, which are obviously pushing these new energy paradigms, there's not that many of them, and we need more. We need more of these endeavors happening in a public space. So yeah, all power to Mr. X and Bob McGuire for trying to push that forward. So I got in contact with Mr. X through a series of mad synchronicities and communications that I never expected to have, which are now ongoing. And it's a privilege to have kind of jumped into this subject, got very interested in a few key areas, and my interests and my pursuit of those interests has indeed like kind of caused the fruition of communications with different people that I really did not expect to be in communication with. So I feel very honored, very privileged to be in the position that I'm in at the moment. So thank you for that question, Andrew. The next question I've got is by MarkSkills100. More information on interdimensional beings. I wish I had more information to give to you in regards to my own opinions. I mean, you know, no one has facts on this. We've heard about interdimensional beings throughout time, described in different forms and different ways. What I will do is I will call upon the forest for some advice and ask for them to bring my book to me. This book is Conversations with God, Book 4, Awaken the Species by Neil Donald Walsh. Don't be thrown off by the title Conversations with God. I promise you this isn't some Bible stuff, and I'm not about to start preaching at you. Awaken the Species, you will have seen that on the back of my videos, at the end of my videos. It does indeed come from this book, and I will give you a bit of background as to why it does, and also why I'm bringing this up now in relation to the question that you've just asked. So I don't have, obviously, any first-hand factual knowledge to present to you on interdimensional beings. There's nothing that I could give to you that would be absolute fact, but I have had experiences of my own involving orange orbs of light that flew over my skies and hovered over my house, which I personally feel may have been within that thread of existence. I can't prove that. But basically, the reason I'm bringing this book up is because the three books that Neil Donald Walsh wrote before this, this is book four, he never expected to write this book. The three books he wrote before that, which I'll have to speak about in a little bit more detail further down the line in the Q&A because someone's asked about book recommendations, but essentially he wrote three books that are definitely some form of channeling. Now he's said it's Conversations with God because he believes it to be a communication with God. But I was recommended these books by my dad. I didn't want to read them. I was in a depression at the time. Some of you have heard this story before. I didn't really want to read them because I didn't feel like a book would really be able to bring me out of the rut that I was in. I read them and they did change my life. And I'm not saying they're going to change everyone's life at all. I wouldn't go around going, you need to read these books. But they did do quite a lot of work on me. They had a profound effect on where I ended up going in my life in terms of what I started researching from that point onwards in regards to consciousness, quantum mechanics, the UFO subject, obviously ending up initiating contact through the consciousness modalities that are actually hinted at in these books. But the reason, again, why I'm bringing up this book right now is because it got written by Neil Donald Walsh. He didn't actually expect to write it. He just got inspired to write again. And this one is pretty much all about interdimensional beings, or what they call highly evolved beings, that are coming in from other dimensions to assist in an awakening process for humanity. Sounds pretty wild, but when you read it, it does actually have a lot of correlations to a lot of the things that we study as a group in the community, especially if you are looking into the consciousness aspect of the phenomena and the interactions regarding consciousness. So to answer your question, I would like to read a little portion of this book for you. And hopefully this will give you a little bit of an idea, because for me this is actually quite a strong case for the kind of the physics behind, the metaphysics behind the interdimensional beings. So we see these UFOs disappear and reappear, and you know, orbs of light, and these things seem to shift in and out, and this may be a good explanation as to why. So the way that this book is structured is it is a conversation. So you've got Neil basically writing, and then he's then writing what the answer is coming to him in his head. And he's very, you know, if you do your research on this guy, he's not a snake oil salesman. He's not running around kind of saying he has all the answers. He's a very nice old man who actually was homeless for a while and went through a really hard time in his life. And then he had these experiences. And I think if you just do your research on the guy and look into him, you'll realize he's not one of the charlatans. He really isn't. And I would recommend you read the books. I'm not going to say they're going to change your whole life, but they may open you up to some new ideas. But this is a little passage, a little chapter from the book. So hopefully this will answer your question in some format. Is it possible for me to understand in layman's terms the metaphysics of all that we have been discussing? Yes, it is. The question is whether you have the patience for it and the interest in it. It can be helpful to you in expanding your understanding of yourself, your multidimensional universe, and even God. But it could feel a bit like a postgraduate class here for a moment. Go ahead, I'm all ears. Simply consider this. Life everywhere is composed of far more space than matter. This is easily observable with either a microscope or a telescope. Not surprisingly, the universe and a grain of sand look exactly the same depending upon the degree of the sand's magnification. The macrocosm and the microcosm are essentially identical. Now, when pure energy, the primal expression of life, that which we call the essential essence, coagulates, it transforms into what we would call, in human terms, matter. Because these coagulations are vibrating or vacillating at a sufficient speed, the particles constantly move. They not only vibrate or rotate in place, they also move through space, propelled by the energy of their spin, not unlike a top moving across a table as it spins. These countless particles can move so fast, in relative terms, that they appear to be neither here nor there, but everywhere at once, thus creating the illusion of solidity, or what you would call that which is physical. You can watch the blades of a fan or the spokes of a bicycle wheel producing exactly the same illusion, the illusion of solidity. Okay, I've got it. So you're saying that by simply reducing the vibratory frequency or speed of their essential essence, highly evolved beings from another dimension de-solidify or disembody. That's right. All they've done is dramatically slow the spin of their energy particles, thus expanding the time it takes for those particles to get from one point to another in their vibratory pattern. You suddenly see the space between the particles, even as you would see the space between the spokes of a bicycle wheel, if the power that's spinning it is turned down. By the way, take a look at the universe or any of its galaxies from a great enough distance and you will see a big wheel. Now, should the space between the spokes of a bicycle wheel be sufficiently enormous, as it would feel to you if you were the size of a microbe and your perspective was therefore myopic, all you would see for a very long time, until the spoke of the wheel came by, is empty space. In effect, while you are waiting and watching for the next spoke, the solidity will appear to have disappeared. What you do not know is that it was never there to begin with. It was merely the speed of the spokes moving past your line of sight that created the illusion of solidity. When a highly evolved being de-physicalizes, the time between the highly evolved being's energy cycles is so long in relative terms that the space between its vacillations is, also in relative terms, enormous, and what once appeared to others as a solid physical form no longer has that appearance. The entity seems to have disappeared, as it cannot be seen in its entirety unless viewed from a huge, to you unfathomable, distance. The formula is simple. Time plus space equals appearance. If you could stand back far enough from the entire universe and the universe of universes, you would see the body of God. So what physicists are now conjecturing about is true then. There is more than one universe. Yes, the cosmos is a multiverse, not a universe. So, to use a well-worn turn of phrase, we don't know the half of it. To be more accurate, and perhaps coin a new phrase, you don't know the 100th of it. But highly evolved beings from another dimension understand the metaphysics of existence perfectly, and therefore are clear that they neither exist nor cease to exist simply because of the frequency rate of their energetic vibration. They merely appear to be, or not to be, physical. To be or not to be, that is the question. Precisely. Highly evolved beings know that they exist always and forever as vibratory individuations of the essential essence, and that all they are doing is regulating the fluctuations of their energy, altering their vacillations to become seen or not seen, visible or not visible, what you would call physical or non-physical, as it suits their purpose. How simple. They never really embody or disembody. They simply always are. They always are both, and they fill more or less space, in a sense expanding or contracting themselves by merely altering the speed of their energetic vibration. And God is so huge because of your energetic vibration that you can't be seen at all. That doesn't mean you're not there. It just means you're so expanded that the space between your energy particles makes you invisible. Brilliant. You've got it. A metaphysical explanation of God. You and everything are the energy particles of God, and the huge space between the giant spinning particles of the cosmos is mirrored in the huge space, in relative terms, between the particles of which you are comprised. You do understand, yes, that if you look at your own body under enormous magnification, what you will see is exactly what you see when you look up at the night sky. You would see that both you and the cosmos are 99% space. Do you imagine this similarity to be a coincidence? If you took the air out of every person on Earth and left only their energy particles, the entire human race would fit into a child's marble. So there you go. There's my little kind of summary on interdimensional beings taken from Conversations with God, book 4, Awaken the Species, A New and Unexpected Dialogue by Neil Donald Walsh. I hope that that has given you some insight into potentially what those types of beings are trying to do. Personally, I do vibrate intuitively with that, and I do feel that there are higher strands of reality and that some of these beings actually are from those strands of reality, or at least can connect to them instantly. And we're just very low down on the learning scale right now. And there's another thing that's said in the book, is there's nothing wrong between being in kindergarten and being in graduate school. You know, it's not a bad thing. What we're doing on this planet is not necessarily a bad thing in the macroscopic level. Obviously, down here on the trenches, we feel the negative experiences of our outcomes, our actions and our reactions. However, it's all a learning process. It's all a growing process. And you can actually look at that in terms of an interpersonal perspective, because you look at your own life, even to a physical level through puberty, you've got growing pains, your bones hurt. You know, as you evolve, as you grow, there is an element of discomfort that is needed for you to be pushed forward. And the same can be said for your life when it comes to the interactions you experience, you know, the drama and the mistakes you make, the things you say to people that you regret. You do these things, but they are learning curves, and they're needed in some way for you to grow as an individual. Because if you didn't have those experiences, how would you ever have a reference point to actually refer back to go, oh, okay, well, I won't do that again, or I won't do that again. I will learn differently and move forward in a better way. So, you know, if you look at the micro to the macro, there's literally a pattern emerging all the way through it of an almost a necessary duality in this physical space. But what they're trying to say, and I think that what these interdimensional beings are trying to say, if they're really here, is that it's like that here for experience purposes, so that we have reference points and so we can go on a journey. But ultimately, at the highest level, it is not that. There is no duality. It is a singularity. There is no separation. It is all one. And we are perceived as a single unified consciousness. And, you know, this seems to me to be the appropriate way to view what we've now termed as God. And that is how I view God. And that is how these books talk about God. So I would recommend them. So yeah, that's my take on interdimensional beings, borrowed a little bit from Neil Donald Walsh, and apparently borrowed from God. But I can't, you know, I can't quote him on that. I do vibrate with it very much so, though. Next one to go through. Let's have a look. Ba-ba-ba-ba-bum. Okay, so the next one we've got is by Rodney Boyer. Rodney Boyer says, Jay, I'm curious to know what you think about good and evil. And I'm not a religious nut, but I've seen a lot of good and bad in my life. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on it. Well, that's kind of strange, isn't it? Because that's what we were just talking about, good and evil. It's a difficult one. I can't come here and preach to you and say there is no real good and evil, because obviously people are going to be going, well, Jay, I've had really bad times in my life and I've had horrible things happen. And, you know, you saying that there's no real good or evil, my life is not proof of that. I understand. And I've also had really bad experiences in my life. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, when close members of my family pass away, inevitably I'm going to be heartbroken and upset and I'm going to go through grief. I'm not saying that, right, okay, this is what I want to say. If you are actually an infinite being, if we are actually an infinite unbounded consciousness that at the zenith, at the fundamental level is actually a loving being, like the most profound spiritual teachers have told us, if it is actually this fundamental loving energy and it's infinite, then you never actually die. There is no real death. And we've actually, you know, we've tricked ourselves quite heavily into believing that there's a death. And so we've created a very, very heavy separation element when we go into what I now try and call a transformation, you know, from physical to metaphysical. But we've convinced ourselves very heavily. And so I understand why you would feel that it's not okay to look at it in this perspective. But if you look at it from the perspective of if we are indeed infinite and unbounded and there is no death, then all of this is simply just experience. And you've come into this knowing that, okay? You've come into this wanting specific experiences, and it's intense. You know, it's intense. It's the most intense experience. You can't trick yourself. We can't just make this disappear. You know, it is very real. And don't ever trick yourself. I talk about this in terms of sometimes it's like a simulation or a bit like the Matrix, but don't ever trick yourself. It's not just a game. You're down here in a very specific way, in a very specific reason for that way. And, you know, you're here to have the full breadth of human experience, which does include sadness and anger and regret and jealousy. But these feelings are only there to be presented to you as points, like I was saying before, points of reference, so that you can experience something and realize what you are in retrospect to that experience. And so I feel that when you look at life in a macro view, if you zoom out of your own life and you see it as an experience field in which free will has been given to us, in terms of we can do quite literally anything we choose, but there are consequences. There's natural action and reaction, what some people call karma, you know. So it is up to you how you move through this life, but all things have been presented to you. All things are here for you to then move through and decide what you are and craft yourself. And everyone's got their own individual way, because what I believe is this infinite, unbounded, expressive consciousness that we call God has formed, or we have formed in some essence, this physical experience known as the universe. We form this huge framework, you know, almost like a sandbox playground, like to experience and to literally experience everything. You know, not everyone will agree with that. You know, some people will say, no, there is genuine evil. But I feel like it can be compared to a theatre or a film. And don't take that the wrong way, because like I said before, this is serious and you should take life seriously in some form. You know, don't get dragged down into the material too much. But this is a serious experience you're undertaking. It's not a trivial experience, you know, it's a serious one. And you're here for reasons, whether you know them or not yet. So I'm not asking you to trivialize it, but if you look at it in perspectives of a film, you can see us all as actors playing our roles, creating our characters. Jay is a character, you know. All of you are a character. You've created a profile, a persona around yourself based on the experiences you've had, based on the teachings of your parents, etc., etc. It's all just a character. And so if you look at that in that perspective, in terms of it's all actors in a play, something that Alan Watts speaks about, the fact that, you know, you can see the world and the universe as a huge stage with all the actors and actresses playing different roles, from heroes and villains to everyone in between, you know, from the best people we've ever had, from the saints and the geniuses and the inventors, all of the great people to the Hitlers and, you know, all of the worst examples of humanity, these villains and these heroes and these people in between that, all creating a vast network of experience. But afterwards, once you quote-unquote die, the actors return to the green room and, you know, shake hands, and essentially it's acknowledged that they were just in an experience, just in a play, and afterwards there is no ill will. That's really hard to hear as a human being because we are down in the trenches. We are here. We are feeling it. We are seeing it. We are experiencing it. And that's what we want to do. But at the same time, do not disregard wanting to experience something. Do not compare wanting to experience something on the soul level to having a nice time on the human level, okay? Because you're down here to experience everything, I believe, in some format. You're down here for the whole gambit, the whole play, and you can pick and choose what you decide to vibrate with intuitively. But I do believe this is an eventual journey back to essentially self-realization, you know, realizing what you are at the ultimate level. And through that realization, through realizing what you are at the ultimate level, what we perceive as bad starts to dissipate, I believe. We're in a society right now that's so separate, you know, from the ground up, from the roots to the leaves, completely and utterly wrong. You know, from education to higher education, to the workforce, to the political system, to the policing system, it's all wrong. It is all wrong, and we know that. Most of us know that, even our parents. I remember my parents as a child, you know, complaining about politicians. We've known this all the time. It is wrong. And so don't expect society to look great right now. We can't expect that. We can't expect it because we're not vibrating at that level. And I think that the issue is that people feel like they're just such a small drop in the ocean. You know, I felt like that for a long time, and I am a small drop in the ocean, but now there's 3,000, just over 3,000 people listening to the channel. And so for me, it's evidence that all of us are capable of that. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm literally saying that as case in point, that all of us have the ability to create domino effects and ripple effects. So if you feel like you have something to say and you feel like you have something to do, do it. Don't be disheartened by seeing the huge structure, because it is a huge structure of corruption and complete polarization to what we should be on. When you look at, you know, the actual global structure of control, it's depressing as fuck. You know, you don't want to be involved in it, but you have to recognize the power you have as an individual to enact change on a micro level and see it echo into the macro, because that is a potential, that is a possibility. And if you have something to say and you have something to do, I suggest you say and do it, because, you know, a thought turns to a word, turns to an action. That's how it works. Thought, word, action. You know, don't stop halfway. Don't just think about these things, talk about them, and then start acting on them in your own way. And if you are genuinely coming from an inspired place, then you will be guided intuitively into the area in which you will flourish the most. That is what I believe. So in regards to good and evil, on a macrocosmic, ultimate, fundamental level, I believe there is no essential good and evil. I think that everything is here as a necessary experience in order to experience all things that can be experienced, right? But down here, it's not easy to see that distinction as a human, and I can acknowledge that every month of my life I've had a moment in which I've acted out of the understandings that I do have. You know, we're all guilty of that. We're all guilty of that, and that's fine, because that's a progressive growing thing if you acknowledge it. If you are conscious that there is a better way of being and a better way of thinking, as long as you acknowledge when you've made mistakes or what you consider to be mistakes and grow from that point, then it's not necessarily a mistake and therefore not necessarily bad. If you grow from these things, all they're here for is to remind you or to push you or to nudge you into a certain direction. And there are certain things that feel out of our control. You know, if we lose a loved one, if something terrible happens that is completely out of our control. But if you honestly believe we're an infinite, unbounded energy, if you do think that that actually does ring true in some level, then nobody dies. Nobody. Nobody. Thank you so much for that question, dude. So we are moving on now to Mere Person. So Mere Person asks, what do you think is the biggest obstacle towards dissolving the exclusivity boundaries between the talking heads in the community? It's a good question. Kind of talking about the key players in the community and, you know, the fact that some people don't speak to each other, and there's, you know, there's book deals and there's conventions and there's films and they don't want to interact. Sometimes they don't want to share information. I mean, you know, the biggest obstacle, I think, is quite obvious. It's ego. You know, the biggest obstacle to pretty much all of humanity is ego, because ego clouds judgment, ego clouds decision making, and it makes you lash out, it makes you angry, it makes you hold things back, it makes you do a lot of things that you shouldn't be doing. Just as we were talking about before, if you could acknowledge your ego, I have an ego, you know, it lashes out sometimes. I do things that I really shouldn't do and I regret them and I try and move past it. But the problem is when you have people that are ego driven and they don't recognize it or they don't care, you know. And there are people in the community that are like that. You know, there are people in every community that are like that. So I think the biggest obstacle is definitely the ego of the human mind and its desire for acknowledgement above all else. And if it doesn't receive that acknowledgement, or it feels like someone else is receiving acknowledgement that it should be receiving, it will lash out in a way, and that way can be very counterproductive to the overall goal of that person. You know, the overall goal may be disclosure, but the ego prevents them from doing something because they want acknowledgement for what's happening. And that's not good, you know, because that is what pushes us back. So I would say it's ego. I've got a plane flying overhead. There we go. So that's gone by now. It was a helicopter flying above my head. To answer your question, mere person, I would say that the biggest obstacle would be ego. So the next question I've got is from Speculative Future. Can you say anything about the further info and work regarding the Davis-Wilson docs? Does it relate to further witnesses on the Davis and Greer meetings with Wilson? Info regarding the actual contract to Black program? Probably know the answer already, but would appreciate any further information you can add without throwing anyone under the bus. Okay, so when it comes to my involvement regarding the New York Times, because obviously to some extent I was involved, which allowed me to get the interview out. I became aware of Leslie and Ralph's interest in this story when Ralph first reached out to Michael Hall, a friend and a colleague of mine who, you know, I was actually lucky enough to jump into the live stream when he was talking to Ralph Blumenthal on the phone and basically speaking about their interest in pursuing, at that point, the Admiral Wilson leaks and information around the Admiral Wilson leaks. I don't think there was mention of crash retrievals specifically outside of the realm of the Admiral Wilson leaks at that point, but I'm not 100% sure. So I became aware that they were making a story at this point. I didn't become directly involved with Ralph or Leslie until I made the breakdown video with Mr. X. So the ultimate breakdown of the Admiral Wilson documents, which is a 3-hour and 17-minute analysis going word for word through the documents, where Mr. X brings a profound level of research knowledge to the table, dropping all sorts of names of people that weren't previously connected to the documents but have, you know, subsequently been connected via his research. And it was at this point when I made this breakdown, which, just to, you know, clarify, is available now and has been available for quite some time. When we made this breakdown, within 24 hours, me and Mr. X were contacted by Ralph and Leslie. So basically, they wanted us to consider taking down the video just for a small level of time, 30 days to be exact. And that would give them enough time to essentially secure leads in investigating this story. And there were subsequent discussions between Mr. X and Ralph and Leslie, because we did agree to take down the video. Now, the reason we took down the video, was because I realized that the New York Times has a lot more influence, a lot more clout, can, you know, basically push a lot more further than Project Unity. And so it seemed like a logical step to make for them, to essentially just back off a little bit and let the New York Times do their thing, let these journalists bring out a story, because there's no way that I'd be able to reach the same level of people as the NYT. So it made sense to me. But the one condition that I put into it, you know, I didn't want money or anything. I just wanted to secure the first interview, because at the end of the day, I'm still operating a platform and I want to try and further my platform. I don't want to hold things back, or, I don't want to demand money for these types of things. I just want to try and get my voice out there a little bit further. And so basically, I said to them, I'll take it down for 30 days, as you've requested, but I would like to have the initial interviews with yourselves when you drop these articles, because I really, this would be a great opportunity for me to be able to get questions in from the community. And I'd just really appreciate if you'd consider that being part of the agreement. And then my opinion on the stories, obviously, from a perspective within the UFO community, we know that there could have been more. And I know there could have been more in regards to the Admiral Wilson leaks and things like that. And it is my opinion that they are still definitely looking into those areas of research, because they had a profound interest in it, to the level of which they actually asked me to take down a video, which was 3 hours of nothing but Admiral Wilson. So, that's quite a good signature to you that they are still interested, I would imagine, in pursuing a story related to these documents. I'm not speaking for Ralph or Leslie when I say that. That's just my opinion, but it would seem that way based on the interactions we've had, them asking me to take down this video. The next one is from Sapir Audi. And they ask, where can I find the Unity Discord server and why is there no CYTube channel? First of all, CYTube, I checked it out. I don't really know what it is. You know, I'm kind of a young guy, but I haven't really been plugged into all the different platforms that we have these days. I don't Snapchat or any of that stuff. And I don't really know what CYTube is. Maybe I'm really out of touch here and someone can tell me it's relevant. Is it relevant? Drop it in the comments below. Your first question was about the Unity Discord. So the Unity Discord, it was set up as a platform that was exclusive to Patreons, and that is still the case. Obviously, I don't keep information hidden. When I first brought up the fact that I was going to make a Patreon, it's because if I'm being perfectly honest with you guys, I'm not a rich person. I'm living a very basic life, and I'm trying my hardest to kind of keep this going on top of managing life. So I gave it. I gave the Patreon out as a basically an offering. If you wanted to contribute, you can contribute to my channel, and the reward for doing that will be that I will set up a Unity Discord channel and we can all communicate back and forth. There's no information. That was always important to me, though, is that there's no information blockage. That's never happened. So anything that gets discussed in the Unity Discord would immediately go to the channel if it was, you know, super relevant, and there's no blockage between data coming out from the channel. And I made that point quite clear when I first set up the Patreon, because I wanted to make it very clear that this wasn't me making data exclusive ever. This has always to me been about freedom of information and me trying my best to understand this stuff and then articulate it back to an audience, and have a discussion. It's never been about making money, ever. All I'm trying to do is trying to create a secondary financial stream so that I can become a little bit more self-sustained, so that I can keep doing this as full-time as possible. And that's literally all it is. So if you want to contribute to that, then you can become a Patreon, and then you can join the Unity Discord alongside James Rigney and Bob Aguirre and a few other people. I think we've got about 12 or 13 people on Patreon right now. And I'm very grateful to every single one of them for contributing continually to the channel. So if you do want to join the Discord chat, you will have to become a Patreon. But like I said, there's no blockage of information. It's never been about that. It's just meant to be a way of you guys helping me out if you want to do that. But subscribing and liking and sharing is more than enough. So, you know, don't worry about that too much. So the next question I've got is by Gasper74. Gasper74 is a subscriber that's been about for a while. I see him quite a lot on Richard Dolan's comments and on the live chats. So he asks, if there was one thing about the UFO phenomenon that you think would be the biggest paradigm shift for humanity, what would that be? And then the second question he asks is, there's more than likely far stranger things going on than possibly just aliens from another planet visiting us. What do you think could possibly be the one thing that no one has really thought of? Thanks. Well, both your questions kind of tie into kind of a singular answer. I would say that one of the more overlooked areas of the phenomena would definitely be the consciousness aspect of it. A lot of people focus on the nuts and bolts, which is really important. And this is the thing with me, is I'm nuts and bolts and I'm consciousness. And it seems like some people feel like you can't be, which is really weird to me. Project Unity is called Unity because I believe that the necessary step to take in regards to humanity going forward into a new and better way is a symbiosis of science and spirituality in terms of consciousness, the open awareness, the universal awareness of consciousness, and the deep kind of very esoteric truths that seem to be resonating from the consciousness aspect of the phenomena, coupled with the quantum, the science, the material, the metamaterial, the vacuum engineering. You know, these things work in symbiosis with each other, or at least they should be. And I do believe that many of these beings that are utilizing a technology paradigm that is within the realms of instantaneous, interstellar, perhaps even interdimensional travel, are using technologies and modalities that come from consciousness. And this is something that has been repeated and echoed by many people. And obviously I have had my own experiences, very visceral experiences through consciousness. I would say that the most overlooked thing is probably the same thing that Jacques Vallée talks about in regards to something from the metaphysical, something from the higher strands of reality, essentially piercing through the facade, you know, coming in through the curtain and entering our world. And within the realms of the physical world, they have, you know, full control over it, because they know, like, intrinsically what it really is. It's a little bit like The Matrix. You know, I don't want to get corny and start using film references, but The Matrix is, it's basically the same thing. And it's what I was saying before, is I do see this as some form of a simulation, but take it, you know, don't look at it trivially. It's not like you can just run around shooting people and stuff. Don't do that, you know, bad idea. It's an experience field in which we've decided to take part in, but it is essentially like The Matrix. And it seems like these things are trying to come in and wake us up and go, look, yes, you're in a very real experience right now, but this material, physical, solid experience that you're so invested in to the point where you're killing each other over it is not the ultimate reality, and that you have a lot more to see and a lot more to do and a lot more to learn. And we're trying to spark that spark of learning. We're trying to get you to realize that if you open up your mind and your perception, because perception dominates how you perceive everything, your understanding dominates what you see and what you feel and what you intuitively bring into your life. I've realized that more as I've become more intuitively open and allowing my life to take place in a natural way. I've had more things come my way in that time than ever before. And that's the only reason why I'm talking about it, you know, because these things have happened to me in a way that has allowed me to go, right, well, that's not just coincidence, you know. So I think that these beings, I've forgotten what the question was. Yeah, so yeah, I think that these beings, from the metaphysical, from the consciousness aspect of this, that seem to be represent of a much more advanced, much higher understanding of where we are right now in this reality. I think that that's the more overlooked area of this. I think there's many, you know, there's probably things out there that we could not even fathom. I mean, again, it depends on what you believe with Tom DeLonge, but even in his early 2016 Fade to Black Coast to Coast rampage, where he was, you know, kind of going off the hook about certain things that he's dialed back on now, he was saying that there's, you know, there's space amoebas, there's giant amoebas in space, and one's this big and one's the size of planets that float around. And I mean, you know, damn, if he's actually legitimately correct, if that's been something that he's been read in some format, then you know, the universe is probably teeming with bizarre things that we couldn't even begin to comprehend. But out of the things that we already are starting to try and get to grips with, I would say the most overlooked right now is the higher dimensional consciousness aspect of this. And I think it plays an integral role. It plays an equal role to the technology. We have seen already, evidently, that our technology has surpassed our philosophy, our spirituality, our conscious empathy as a planet, as a global collective. Technology's up here and empathy and consciousness is like down here, and we need these things to be working like this. We need that. And so I think that the most overlooked aspect would be the symbiotic effect of bringing both these things into the field. But I think they're coming. I think that the further that quantum physicists begin studying the foundations of reality and breaking apart these blocks and finding what's inside, they're gonna find God in their own scientific paradigm. They're gonna say, well, it turns out that the universe, the field of experience that we are currently residing within, is made at its most fundamental level from a form of coherent energy that is entangled with all things in the known universe. You know, I'm not a scientist. I can't put it any smarter than that. But that's kind of how I feel they would word it. You know, a coherent energy form that is the foundation of all life, and then they would probably try and avoid calling it God, which is a buzzword, because, you know, people don't believe in God, people think God's a bearded person in the sky, people think all sorts of things. That's okay. I think a certain thing, could be wrong. I just feel like my life has intuitively kind of guided me into an area where I've learned about these things, and so I do have a faith in that. You know, I'll admit that to a certain degree I have a faith, but I've also had experiences. So that's really solidified the other aspects that I'm starting to learn about that I haven't fully realized yet. Next question is by Disarray. Why do you think people are being abducted and experimented on? They also ask if I have any book recommendations. So the first book recommendation, real quick, would be this one, alongside the other three books that he's written in the Conversations with God series. Again, I'm not trying to preach at you. If you don't want to read them, you don't have to read them. And I'm not saying they'll change your life. All I'm saying is they had a, you know, personally quite a profound effect on me. And if you feel like you and I have similar feelings and ideologies, then perhaps they'll be really good for you. So that's the first book I'd recommend. I'd also recommend the Forbidden Science volumes by Jacques Vallée. They're written like journals. They are the best ones to read. I was actually on a phone call. Paula Harris phoned me up a few weeks ago to talk about a couple of things. And she was, Paula Harris, of course, being known as one of the assistants for Dr. J. Allen Hynek of Project Blue Book. She was saying that you need to read Volume 3. Volume 3 of Jacques Vallée's Forbidden Science, you absolutely have to read. So that's something that I'm going to be jumping onto once I've finished the book I'm currently reading, which is The Hunt for Zero Point, which is written by Nick Cook, which he was kind enough to provide for me in preparation for an interview, which has been delayed. And I feel really bad about that. And I'm going to jump on it. And Nick, if you're watching this, I am almost finished with the book and I'll be ready to rock and roll pretty soon, but I'm sorry, I've had some mad delays due to some crazy things happening. But yeah, Forbidden Science, the Jacques and other materials written by Jacques Vallée, Abraham Hicks, the Seth materials, God, there's so many different books, the conversation books that I just mentioned with God. But yeah, in terms of what I'm looking into at the moment, I would say Jacques Vallée is at the top of my list. You know, he's at the top of my list at the moment that I want to read through as much of Jacques Vallée's material as possible. And I've been told that The Forbidden Science, you know, that's basically more of a journal and the most true to his own experiences. So the I would recommend them for sure. Oh yeah, and also I would recommend the Secret Machines books. The Secret Machines books, they do actually provide some good insight if you've already done research. If you don't have a background knowledge on certain areas like the contract to private industry sector and the anti-gravity and TR-3B and all that kind of stuff that people say is maybe real and reverse engineering, and then you look at the structure of financial, global finance and how that might be involved. If you've been looking into those types of things, then this book will ring quite true. And with the Nazi reverse engineering, the whole Nazi involvement in electrogravitic studies, these things are involved in the book. And you know, there are certain elements that will obviously, you know, that it's been written in a fictional way, but it's almost kind of like Mr. A and Mr. X kind of thing. You know, MJ-12 has been replaced with the Maynard Consortium, and the TR-3B has been replaced with the Locust. But those points, I believe, are trying to push forward the fact that these may be realities. So I would recommend the Secret Machines books for sure. You have to read between the lines a little bit and just realize where they're trying to hint that there is some truth to this. Next question is by Chris Sullivan. I heard something from the New York Post's basement office where a gentleman said that he has heard through his research that these craft or things aren't necessarily a tic-tac or gimbal or saucer, but they manifest themselves into our consciousness to appear in a way that we can understand. Have you heard of this before? It makes sense, but I'm not too well read on the consciousness aspect of the UAP thing. Thank you for all that you do. So Chris Sullivan, yeah, you are referring to Tim McMillan, Lieutenant Tim McMillan's recent interview on the basement office, where he does talk about that. He talks about his research and the fact that the Roswell crash, I believe in particular, was detailed to be something that you would see what you wanted to see when it came to that. And again, this does lead into the idea of a lot of these things seem to be integrally related to consciousness, higher levels of consciousness, the ability to skew perception, the ability to skew time, maybe even matter itself. And so you are dealing with technologies that, you know, fall into what Arthur C. Clarke described in terms of any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, which this is. It is a form of magic to us, but it's not. You know, it's like going back in time and giving a caveman an iPhone. It's magic, but it's science. It's technology that can't be understood at a certain point in time. And so we're looking at this stuff and we're seeing it and we're going, well, that's just magic. But it's not. It's just a type of science, a type of physics. And so this physics does seem to be connected to consciousness. So people who, you know, are just completely on the nuts and bolts on this, you do need to get onto the 50-50. You know, it is about nuts and bolts and it is about consciousness. And if you're not looking at both of these things, you are missing out on half of this story. I can guarantee you that. So yeah, thanks for that, Chris. Lieutenant Tim McMillan was talking about that. Next one is from Tristan H. Would you do a video detailing the best evidence of weird stuff happening on Skinwalker Ranch if you haven't already? I have uploaded a couple of things. I've uploaded a lecture by George Knapp, which I believe includes some footage. I've uploaded the recent Anomalies Court on the TV series that's going out by Brandon Fugel and his team in regards to Skinwalker Ranch. But I don't think I've done a compilation video of what I believe to be the weirdest stuff. There's a lot of stories. There's a lot of ones that you can't, you know, prove because there's no photo evidence for. But there are some really cool stories. So if people want me to do a Skinwalker Ranch one where I just talk about my personal kind of top five or top 10 weird things that have happened there, I'll happily do that. It's a weird area. And I think it's cool that it's getting more attention. I haven't watched some of the more recent episodes of the Skinwalker Ranch series. I haven't caught up with all of it, but I'm, you know, really interested in the area. And I think it's good that there's now a public endeavor going down and it's not just being classified and sequestered by the Department of Defense and Robert Bigelow. You know, I don't know if we're ever going to see the big report that came out from Bass, other than the front cover with the black triangle on it. But and I think a few select pages have been shown publicly. But apart from that, we haven't got the full report, and I doubt we ever will. So the next question we have got is by Philip Emery. Philip says, the three films released by the US Navy and the subsequent comments from Luis Elizondo that they are a threat to the USA and other countries makes me worried. I believe he's saying, you know, that the UAPs are a threat in terms of what Luis Elizondo and TTSA have said. I am aware that it is generally accepted across the UFO community that there are friendlies, neutrals, and hostile ETs. Does he know more, or is his background one that anything we don't understand and is superior to us is always considered a threat? None of the three films show the US Navy under attack, but rather an intelligence that is way superior to anything here on Earth. Yes, I can understand that to have military superiority over an enemy is important, but just to treat the visitors as an enemy without knowing them or understanding them is dangerous to us. My concern is that humanity will shoot first without an understanding of what we are dealing with and what we are experiencing. We humans have a propensity to attack first and then ask questions, and in dealing with the visitors in this way would be harmful and detrimental to our contact with them and our understanding. Contact has been happening for many years now, and if we want full disclosure and to have meaningful contact, then we do it. Then how do we do it with a mindset of it's a threat? How do we stop ourselves from being aggressive and thus understand contact, the visitors, advanced technology, and that we are truly not alone? It is something not discussed, and it's time it is. So that's a really good point, and I really appreciate the question. I have a few theories when it comes to TTSA with the threat thing. Obviously, there are certain people, like, for example, Stephen Greer, who will say it is 100% you know, a disinformation intelligence front that is preparing humanity for a psychological warfare against ETs or against a fake alien invasion. You know, and that essentially the idea of proposing it as a threat is to generate that panic and that fear, and will allow pave the way essentially for them to create what they refer to as apparently full spectrum dominance. It's a pretty intense theory that, you know, I can't speak on the truth of it. All I can say is my own opinion on TTSA. I think that they've pushed some really good ground. I don't particularly trust them 100%. I appreciate everything that they've been pushing forward and how they've managed to change the stigma within the media and within the mainstream and created political ripple effects. For example, now the bill proposed by Senator Marco Rubio regarding UAP data being declassified. So there are lots and lots of other things, including the footage and the Navy and the Pentagon admittance, lots of things. We all know these things now. The way that they're addressing it as a threat, one way that I would look at it is they have hinted, Luis Elizondo has definitely hinted, and Hal Puthoff obviously has hinted, that the consciousness aspect of this is something they understand to a pretty high level. And Luis Elizondo had a quote that was given to us by Jim Semivan during a book signing with Secret Machines, or it might have been the other one, God's Man and War, where essentially he said that Luis believes that we will find the truth about this subject in between the nexus of quantum mechanics and consciousness. And this is what I'm saying, that these machines and their occupants are utilizing, in what we call in the physical paradigm, in the scientific physical paradigm, by observing it, quantum mechanics and, you know, physics. And that is what's happening. But that physics, that quantum mechanics that they are utilizing at such an advanced state bleeds into consciousness. It's tapping into the underlying vibration, the underlying energy of this, and that is consciousness, and that will be found out, you know, in a wide scale way. I mean, it's already been found out. What I mean is it will be discussed and looked into on a much more wide scale in the coming years. I guarantee it. I absolutely know that as a fact. It will happen, you know. Call that my Nostradamus prediction for the future. You know, in the next 5 years, we're going to see a lot more intense consciousness study, and it will be related to UFOs. So yeah, you know, you're looking at these things, and they do actually seem to be connected to this technology. So yeah, you know, these guys, they understand that. They understand that this is happening at a conscious level as well. And what I would say is that they may be dressing this up as a threat. I don't feel like they're pushing it as hard as other people say that they're pushing it, but they are, you know, they are talking about it as a threat. I would say that they're probably addressing this as a threat because you cannot go to the mainstream political establishment structure or the mainstream media structure and just simply start talking about very intense consciousness-related ET, UFO, propulsion, quantum vacuum engineering-related concepts. You can't. We've been looking at it. We're a very niche group, you know. Sometimes we forget that. I definitely forget that. I forget that other people don't even know what quantum vacuum engineering would mean. You know, I barely know what it means, but I can understand what it's being referred to as by people like Hal Puthoff. And some people don't even know who Hal Puthoff is. Most people don't even know who Hal Puthoff is. So, you know, we're dealing with people who are extremely uninformed, right? That's not a bad thing. It's just the facts. It's the facts of the matter that we're dealing with very uninformed people who are also in positions of power and influence and control and apparatus of national security that deals with threats and all of that type of thing. So how do you get them to pay attention to the subject, you know? Do you walk into Congress, do you walk into the senators' offices and say, look, there is technologies being utilized by beings that are so far in advance of us in both technology and consciousness that they're trying to permeate through our society, potentially in order to wake us up from what we're doing right now. And it seems to be related in some way to a spiritual enlightenment of the planet. Get out of my office. You know, you're not gonna get a discussion with that. What you have to get is you have to get serious, you know, serious discussion happening through their language. And so you speak their language. And so I would say that they're probably speaking the language of the political structure. They're talking about threats. They're talking about sovereignty. They're talking about national airspace, talking about national security. These are the words that these people within the structure that unfortunately is propping up society right now. They love those words. They love it. They eat it up, you know? So basically, they're giving them what they want. They want to see something that they can coherently understand in a language. So it's a thing they don't get, right? We're looking at something that we don't understand, and we've been doing our research on it. So how do you get people who are just in the military and in the defense and in the intelligence services to actually understand this? You have to speak their language. So they're coming at them, I believe, maybe as a potential theory. I'm not saying this is fact, but they could be presenting it within the language of threats, national security, sovereignty, airspace, blah, 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 because that's how you actually get systemic changes. That's how these people become, you know, that's how they change laws. That's how they actually manage to dislodge information. And that's what we've seen taking place, because the senators and the people that have been briefed on this are now going, oh, okay, well, this is serious. You know, we need to understand the threat. Hopefully, what I really, really hope with TTSA, what I sincerely wish to be the case, is that they're doing this with a long game plan, and that the long game plan is to essentially start with this, because this is how you begin a political discussion and a legal discussion of, we have a threat, so give us information that you've been sequestering because we now need it. We now need it. And people who do not understand this subject will agree with that. They'll be like, oh my God, yes, we need it. Give us the information. That's how you start. If that happens and they manage to dislodge information, TTSA will then start explaining that information. And the more of that information that comes out, it may be that the more of it is consciousness related, and we start evolving in terms of how these things are explained to us. So perhaps, again, just a perhaps, the reason for the threat narrative is because it's leading on to the consciousness narrative, all right, the nuts and bolts, that's, you know, that's one aspect of this. But if you can wrap your head around some of the elements of the consciousness interactions, you are, you're making good progress with what these beings, I believe, are involved in and how they live and how they interact and how they want to interact with us. The technology is one aspect of it. You need to have the consciousness. I would say that they are probably, I know they're aware of it because they've hinted at it, but they are probably addressing this in the way that they feel it has to be done, based entirely on how society is operating. How do we do this? With the society we have to address it in the language they understand and then go from there and educate further. I sincerely hope that's the case. If not, I do think they're pushing the threat narrative a little too heavily because there's so much that we don't understand. You can't just call it a threat. You know, it's a threat to national identity, but we don't really need that. We don't really need separation. We need to move into a more unified manner. And so, I think they're challenging our airspace because, in a macro cosmic sense, we don't have airspace. We don't need airspace. We only think we need airspace because we're all fighting each other and we're all so argumentative. But ultimately, it's all our space together. And I think that they're just trying to prove that point. So the next question is from Terry Hall. Terry Hall asks, so now after the recent rounds of events, the Pentagon's acknowledgement, senators and congresspersons calling for a full report as the unacknowledged group can cobble together in 6 months, the Wilson Papers and that entire drop of a dime, do we start to say disclosure with a little d, to quote George Knapp? My question is this. With the reports requested in our government and all of the departments named specifically, should there be a fresh round of FOIAs now that it's a bit clearer who to contact? FOIAs meaning Freedom of Information Act requests. And yeah, absolutely, Terry. I think, unfortunately, as a UK citizen, I don't believe I can actually request a Freedom of Information Act information from your government. But I would encourage, and I would do it to my own government, the Ministry of Defence, and what we have here. They are a lot quieter than your government at the moment, and they are not trying to address this subject in any shape or form. But yes, I think that now that you've learned a few more things, there are FOIA-able keywords and programs and things. One thing I would suggest is listening to Hal Puthoff's discussions, like the 2020 Transition Talk Conference, which is on my channel, and the older conference that he did, I believe, in 2018, which is on my channel, because he uses key terminology. He uses key terminology such as advanced aerospace vehicle, AAV, not UAP, not UFO, not ARV, AAV. These are kind of FOIA-able terms potentially, and there are other things. So it's good to listen because I think these people are trying to drop hints, and there is more information coming out that is going to allow you to have a clearer perspective. I think people such as, John Greenwald from the Black Vault, this is his time to shine more than ever because we are now in a place where people want to see more information coming out. So we need to work on digging up all of this, anything that can be dislodged from FOIA-capable endeavors is a benefit to us. So yes, I would say absolutely this is a time where you should be doing your due diligence, finding things that you feel are of interest, and then asking your government to be transparent on them. Next question comes from Jojo. Hi, I know you said it doesn't have to be UFO connected. I am from Warrington, Northwest UK, and it is bugging me as I can't quite place your accent. Where did you grow up? I bounced around. So I'm originally from Reading. That's where I was born. I was born in Reading. Moved to Banbury, which is another place in England. And then when I was, a young kid, I think maybe about 8 or 9, I moved to North Wales and spent a number of years in North Wales. Then I moved to London for university. And I moved to Hertfordshire. I bounced around London for a while, then I moved to Hertfordshire, and now I've moved to Nottingham. So I've really bounced around. I'm a bit of a social chameleon, so I pick up accents. I've started to get more of a northern accent since I've been in Nottingham, because it's a northern area of England, unlike London, which is southern. So I've got a kind of a weird twist of accents. I don't really have a Welsh twang to my accent at all. I've still got quite a British accent, an English accent. But I was born in Reading originally, but I bounced around. I lived most of my life in Wales as a child, to be honest. But I just didn't really pick up the accent. And I think maybe some of that was because I was given a bit of a hard time for being English in school. There's just, the typical stuff of Welsh versus English, or you know, anything where you're an outsider, you're essentially a foreigner in some respects. And so I had difficult times in school just dealing with kids who just didn't like the fact that I was English. So I think that maybe kind of reinforced as a kid how I spoke, because I was like, no, I'm gonna, you know, keep my accent. And so maybe that's what it is. But yeah, a few people have said that before, that it's kind of difficult to place my accent. So there you go. I hope that was informative for you. Thanks for the question, Jojo. Almost done. A few more. So the next one's by Andre. He asks, or she, what is the disclosure of 5 UFO patents on the drive all about? And do you think they have scientific substance to them, as the author seems to be fictional? So the author, Salvatore Pei, or Pai, however you pronounce it, these articles on the drive that were detailing these patents coming out from the US Navy Patent Office, essentially detailing things like gravitational wave displacement, inertial dampening, compact fusion reactors that relied on gravitational plasma pressurization, and all this very intense stuff. Basically, the guy is real. They have actually found out that he's a real person, so that guy does exist. And I've changed my opinion on those, because I was given information later down the line. You know, I'm a layman when it comes to science of that level. So I listened to it and I was like, oh, that sounds a lot like UFO technology, and that seems all right. But I was quite quite naive, I guess, because I didn't really think straight away, well, why would they put this out on Google? I mean, for goodness sake, it's on Google Patents. The US Navy declassifying, like, basically UFO technology on Google Patents. It doesn't really make much sense when you look at it under a bit of a magnifying glass, does it? You don't even really need a magnifying glass. So I'm a bit annoyed at myself that I initially actually took it for granted and just believed it. But I've had further communications with people that I trust in terms of their scientific background and their pedigree. And this is what they believe to be real science in terms of the actual production methods. It could take place, it could potentially be real, but it's full of a lot of breadcrumbs you don't need. It's full of a lot of science that isn't necessary. It's basically an overly complicated version of something that you could be achieving through something like the Sapphire Project, for example. So the Sapphire Project, I think I've already said this, but it's a good way of streamlining this process. And it seems like the patents that have come out through the Navy are an extremely convoluted and complicated way of arriving at the same technologies that are being looked at through the Sapphire Project. So I find that very interesting. So I would say that the inventor's probably real. I would say the inventor genuinely believes these to be the best way to do it. I don't think he's disinforming people, but I think the US Navy might have used this as an opportunity to put some disinformation out into the field, potentially for Russian or Chinese competitors. That's just my opinion. Next question is from this is another one from Disarray. Also, I would like to know your views of religious connotations of the phenomena as it's represented in the past, and or how the phenomena has influenced our history. Obviously there are so many biblical stories and religious stories going back through time that now, given the perspective we have through modern science and technology and observation of what we now call UFOs, we can look back on previous historical events and go, well, that does actually seem quite indicative of the phenomena, of what we've called the phenomena. I would say, yeah, there is probably an element of something being involved in our evolution, in our growth. Whether that's inherently extraterrestrial from another physical planet body that's come here and meddled with another planet, or whether that's a metaphysical thing that is happening on a level that we haven't fully comprehended, I don't know. But I would say that there's many things like Ezekiel's wheel, and others. Ezekiel's wheel is just one of the ones I like to bring up, because it's quite obvious that something weird was happening there, with rotating circles within circles falling, coming down from the sky in a blazing flame. Things like that, given the perspective and the knowledge we have now as a more modern society, quotation marks on modern, it does seem like, you know, these things were actually the phenomena interacting. So Tom DeLonge, I'm bringing up Tom DeLonge because he believes to some extent that these have happened to create division, separation, different religions, and then war. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if I believe that there have been interactions that have taken place solely to produce a aggressive negative outcome for the human species. I don't know if I'm prepared to believe that yet, mainly because I haven't seen enough evidence for it. And so, you know, if it comes to that point, then all right, you know, that's what we're dealing with. But intuitively, I just feel like that's probably not the case. And maybe there have been interactions and maybe things have come down, but I don't know if there's actually been something that has been directly steering us from A to B to C to D to where we are right now, you know, absolutely and completely. And everything that is happening on this planet that is bad is because of an outside force influencing us. I think that takes away from the human struggle, that takes away from empathy with your own species and with our own abilities, and understanding that, you know, we have a part to play in improving the human species. Because if it's all just down to some force moving us around like chess pieces, then we're not in control. And I don't believe that. I think we are in control. And I think the more that we seize control, the more that we actually start to change the world. So, I would say that the connotations of religious implications are an extremely interesting one that we don't fully understand yet. I would say that they've definitely interacted with us through time. What that purpose is, I don't fully understand, but I don't intuitively vibrate with it being a negative, malicious, controlling force. But I hope I'm right in that regard. And if I'm wrong, then we just have to deal with that. But I do believe that even if there is some force interacting with us, there is a force beyond that. There is the ultimate force, the ultimate essence, the essential essence, the source, or what we sometimes call God. You know, the foundational creation energy is what it is. Anything inside that is just an experience being experienced. And so I'm not too afraid of outside forces such as that, because I believe that the ultimate force is on our team, always and forever. Everyone. And not everyone wants to hear that, but it's on everyone's team. All at once. Doesn't judge. All right, so the next question we have is by Rodney Boyer. Hello, Jay. I'm curious what you think of the Skinny Bob film. I have a lot of respect for Richard Dolan and Tracy, and I was wondering if you know what their opinion on this video is. I have personally never heard them weigh in on it or give it any opinion. If you have possibly heard anything on their opinion that I haven't heard, I know that Nick Pope's opinion is that he thinks it's a fake. Thank you for your time, Jay. So that's the last question. So the Skinny Bob is a really controversial video. I am like 80% on it being real. I have some people that have spoken to me that have told me that it is real, that it was part of their briefing slides at the Tonopah missile test range when they received what was known as a Yankee GN briefing, brackets GN good neighbor, Yankee good neighbor, which was apparently a development on the Yankee Black briefing that was actually received by Richard Doty. Now, obviously, Richard Doty is a controversial character. And this is a briefing that involved the Ebens, what we know as the Ebens, which are apparently programmed life forms, according to some of these, you know, people that I've spoken to, who have said that these are, androids, robots that are extremely complex and extremely intelligent. And that what you're seeing in the Skinny Bob footage is essentially a robot. You know, its movements are a little strange, but it is essentially a robot. Now, what I want to do with the Skinny Bob footage is I want to address a couple of key areas, just things that make it seem very strange. Now, look at the footage. I'm rolling it on screen. Look at the footage. It is very well done, okay? If it's fake, let's just go from the perspective of it's fake. It's really well done. It's amazingly well done. It's, the CGI, if it's CGI, it's fantastic. If it's prosthetics, if it's costume design, makeup, it's fantastic. The level of expertise gone into this is actually quite profound. And there's been filmmakers who have said the same thing, that this is unbelievable, you know. For it to not be claimed, for someone to not take responsibility for that ever, is very, very strange. People take responsibility for their fakes. They let the excitement build. They let the hype happen. They let a lot of people get interested, and then they come out and they soak up the glory. Even if it's people shouting, "I hate you for doing this. I can't believe you'd fake it." They love it. People like that get off that. They love it, right? No one has ever come out and claimed responsibility for the Skinny Bob footage, which, if it's fake, would have taken a phenomenal amount of effort, including a team, including location, CGI, makeup and design, and real effects. It is a seriously well done fake if it's fake, and nobody's taken responsibility, which is completely against human programming. And if they didn't do that, if they didn't take responsibility for it, I've got my coffee in my hand now, in case you're wondering what that was. If they didn't do that, they would make more. They would make other footage, they would make additional footage, they would make other things that were similar, you know, they'd work hard and they'd make other ones, and they'd make a viral sensation. Who is this? What is this? Look at these amazing classified information coming out, oh my gosh. You know, they would want to ride the wave. What happened in reality was that these videos were uploaded by a no-name channel, no subscribers, just Ivan 3 something, I can't remember the numbers, it was Ivan something. Just uploaded over a decade ago, I believe now, and that's it. End of story. They didn't talk about it, they didn't try and capitalize on it, they didn't try and monetize their channel, they didn't try and add more content, they didn't speak about it, no one came out claiming responsibility for it, no one made other similar attempts, even though it was very successful and lots of people were like, oh my god, this is real. So these are extremely important areas to focus on. These are not pedantic little things that I'm trying to make mountains out of molehills with. These are important areas of human psychology when it comes to faking things. You want recognition if you're putting so much effort into doing something, or you will continue and make more of these things and create a viral sensation. So you know, that's a very strong point. Why has nobody come out and ever said, hey, I did this, lol, you idiots, it's not real? No one's ever done that. You know, and also, you know, the uncanny valley's a very important thing. We're talking about human psychology. When you are faced with something that looks, for all intents and purposes, like a totally different being, but is humanoid-ish, you know, it's humanoid, but it's completely different, completely, your brain gets skewed. It's called the uncanny valley. As something slips down into a human perception, as it gets more and more human, but there's a part of it that isn't human, it starts to become very unnerving to us. And so it's quite easy for your brain to see something like that, which could very much be real, because we've heard of grey aliens for decades. You know, the grey is the trademark of UFO aliens. When people think about it, they think of a grey alien instantly. Even though there's a whole plethora of different claims of different beings, it's always the grey that is the focal point for a long time. So when you see one in reality, if that's what you're seeing, your brain is going to have a difficult time processing that. And so, you know, the hardened skeptics and people that don't want to believe will immediately go, that is fake. But they're not looking at the context. If it's fake, why have we seen no development from that? There has never been a development from that. And it's congruent with other things that I've been told in regards to meetings between certain individuals in military and apparently these Eben species. You know, how much truth is in that? I don't have the facts to back it up. So I'm not saying it's fact. I'm just saying that you have to look at this reasonably with intelligence and actually look at the points of reference within this discussion regarding Skinny Bob. Okay, because Skinny Bob is not just a video. Skinny Bob is a video with a history of why has it not been addressed in a more thorough way. And there's also a channel, I can't remember the name of it now, but I'll put it in a link in the description. There's also a channel that specializes in remote viewing, and they tasked quite a few remote viewers on the Skinny Bob saga. And you know, if you know anything about remote viewing, one, you'll know it's real. There's literally no disputing that it is real, and you just need to look at it further and do investigation, because it's not a speculative thing whatsoever. You know, the CIA has got plenty of evidence for it. SRI International's got plenty of evidence for it. Halpertoff, Russell Targ, all of these people, it's real. So you don't need to worry about, you know, that aspect of it in terms of the validity of remote viewing. But remote viewers were tasked on the Skinny Bob saga. I don't know how much you know about remote viewing, but you know, you're not given the information on what you're viewing. You're given a stimulant of some form to allow for you to then relay back information that's coming into your head, into your mind space, and that's then you know, gathered and correlated with other remote viewers. And so this was done with the Skinny Bob saga, and you know, they all came back with very interesting notes about a being that was, you know, left in a very, very military, very male-dominated environment underground. And, you know, they go into it. So I'll put that in a description box below and as a link, and you can check that out. So I, you know, I'm not 100% on the Skinny Bob, but I think that people who immediately say it's fake are not looking at this properly. They're not looking at it responsibly, because there should be a trail, and there is no trail. It just popped up So I think that's worth considering. And I also think it's worth considering that if it was part of secret slides, if it was part of a real briefing, you know, now that it's been leaked, I'm quite sure, if it has been leaked, obviously, I'm quite sure that they would have placed artifacts into that footage to make it appear less real. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of overlay, there's a lot of film artifacts, a lot of cigarette burns going on. That's what we call it in the industry, cigarette burns, little crackles and pops in the screen filter. And, you know, that a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, it's really easy to make something look quite convincing once you overlay a lot of black and white and a lot of film artifacts and visual effects, which is all, again, very true. But I'm sorry, that does not add to the content in terms of how they made this thing look the way it did, blinking, moving, its muscles are stretching, the vein above its head is pulsing a bit. You know, this is weird, and it's not given enough research by people who have just immediately watched the video. You need to realize again that it's just popped up and no one's ever claimed responsibility for it. Anyway, whew. Guys, that is the end of the community Q&A. So I just want to say thank you to everyone who's taken part and submitted your questions. I really appreciate it. We've had some brilliant questions, and hopefully I've given you some good answers that you're satisfied with. We will continue with the Q&A. This will be an ongoing thing. So when there's more to discuss and when things have heated up a bit in the community, which is going to happen, we will have another Q&A and we can talk about even more things. But yeah, thank you so much for submitting all your questions. Thank you everyone who's in the live chat and talking, and please like and subscribe and share this video. And yeah, just have a great day, morning, afternoon, evening, whatever it is for you. Take care.